You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 12th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live in the warm afterglow of Chuck Todd's first time at the helm of the USS Conventional Wisdom, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Oh, I don't think this was Chuck Todd's first time.
No, well, it was the first time he was doing it without training wheels.
Yeah.
You know, it's yours, Chuck. You got the job, okay? So
even David Letterman noticed that he sucked.
He was so bad.
You didn't mention Syria. Oh, wait.
Like I did five times.
Okay.
I will quote Charlie Pierce. Same circle, different jerk.
We really have done enough Meet the Press in the past 2 weeks. So sure. That's all we're going to talk about for Chuck Todd this week. That's it.
That's all we need to say about that.
This was a really busy week. We're going to talk a little bit about ISIL or ISIS and Ray Rice. But I want to talk about these things in sort of an overarching theme, which is our response to violence and how we as a culture respond to violence. Because the ISIS thing, you know, what really has brought this to the forefront of everyone's mind is a violent video.
Yeah.
And what brought Ray Rice to the attention of the NFL was a violent video. And it's almost as if it's the video that is causing us to react and to respond to violence rather than responding to violence with an adequate response, which is to stop it. 9/11, you know, I mean,
yeah.
My daughter had to interview me about 9/11 this week for school.
Because now it's a history project.
Now it's a history project, exactly.
Yep.
And I had to tell her that for me, it didn't have as much of an impact as it did for some people because I didn't have a television in my house at the time. And one of the problems that people were finding with their children was that they had their TVs on and that this collapse of the buildings was being shown over and over again. And children below a certain age don't have a concept that everything isn't happening right now.
Right.
And so they didn't sense that it was instant replay. And it's just, oh, my goodness, these buildings are falling all over the world every moment. You know, what are we, you know, what are we doing? Ferguson. As soon as there was a video of a reporter getting harassed by a cop, then we have a lot of reporters there. A reporter getting arrested by a cop, actually. And then this week we had a video of a candidate for public office denying that Sandy Hook happened.
Wow.
Yeah, in a debate.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So questioning the grief of a specific parent because he saw him smiling one moment and then had a tear in his eye the next. And so he really doesn't believe that this parent was actually grieving the loss of his child.
Oh,
no kidding.
Because
he smiled once.
Because that's how this this robot understands human
grief.
Emotions.
Yeah. There just seems to be, as I see it, because I spend a lot of time in elementary schools during the week. I'm a volunteer. I'm always showing up at my kid's school. I'm always dropping off a lunch that somebody forgot. I see over and over again in elementary schools, administrators spend 80% of their day dealing with one kid hit another.
Yeah.
Really?
As a person who worked in a college in a variety of capacities, I will say that doesn't go away.
No.
No. It's the hitting is a little more subtle. Sometimes it's literal, but it really is petty disputes over, as John Belushi said, some girl's purse.
Yep. And if you spent any time in a room full of three-year-olds, in a nursery school full of three-year-olds, you realize nonviolence is something we have to learn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
And I mean that not just as individuals. I mean that in terms of nations, you know, macro and micro. We all have to learn nonviolence. That's something we have to learn.
Well, and we, let's face it, we never do.
We, yeah. Well, we as meaning all of us, I mean, there is always the original sin with us, isn't there? That's
why we have cops.
Yeah. And because, that's why we don't put victims on juries.
Yeah. Nonviolence is as a national strategy of protest can be very effective.
Yeah.
But let's face it, I really do hate to draw this analogy, but I think it's really appropriate. We are being, my opinion about the Middle East, about ISIS, is colored by the fact that I know nothing about the region. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about, other than what I've read in a cursory way, I know nothing about the interrelationship of cultures. I know there are arguments that go back hundreds of years. And it would be stupid for me to stick my nose into Bill Kristol style, into a conflict that I know nothing about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that we broke it. We broke Iraq, and we haven't fixed it, and now it's a mess. Mm-hmm. And all the people, including, you know, yours truly, who were terrified that we were kicking open Pandora's box, turned out that's exactly what happened.
It's important, I think, though, to, and I don't mean this in terms of playing a game about it, but to make sure that the mature, intelligent heads in the room are the ones that are counted and the ones that are listened to, rather than Dick Cheney and John McCain.
Well, I think in theory that's a fine idea.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that way.
It never happens that way. And I think that the smartest thing we could possibly do is nothing, is stay the hell away from a place that we clearly know nothing about, where there's a lot of people that don't trust us. Some of them for very good reasons. People have very, very deep disputes with each other. People are bribing people to kill each other. People are training people to hate each other.
Okay, but then I think if we're not getting into the weeds of this because we don't understand it, we need to step away from the weeds and talk more about the bigger picture of violence. Well, because I do think people were very impressed with the beheadings, mentally impressed. I hope I'm making myself clear when I say that. That cutting off someone's head on TV, on a video, is going to have an impact on people's mentality.
Absolutely.
And people's body chemistry is going to change as a result of what you did. Uh-huh. And that's what it was intended to do.
This was the analogy I was going to make, which is I'm treading very carefully here because I want to put it exactly right. I don't want to offend anyone, but I want to make a very clear point. My impulse is to avoid like hell this place that our allies aren't really our allies. Mm-hmm. Everyone would love us to fail. Yeah. If we succeed at all, it will be to empower some group that's only marginally better or worse. Mm-hmm. We end up accidentally aiding the worst people in the world. And if we screw up, everybody gets to hate on us because, you know, the hegemon came in and fucked everything up. This is an absolutely no-win scenario.
And we will not be given credit if we do well.
And rule one is don't let your enemies bait you into a fight on their terms. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Do not let the enemy tell you the ground on which you're going to fight, which is exactly what happened here. And it was all driven by two videos, all of it. Mm-hmm. However, the American civil rights movement would never have been as powerful and as far-reaching as it was were it not for video.
Yes, that's right.
Were it not for TV cameras filming kids getting fire hosed and old men being attacked by dogs and Bull Connor being the bigot out of central casting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And loving a microphone, these very good, very brave people who marched and died and were beaten and brutalized were, in a sense, cast in those roles. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they were insincere. It's that they were prepared for life in front of a camera because getting the attention of the nation was the object of the exercise. Mm-hmm. The people they were protesting against were thrilled to be beating them. Mm-hmm. You know, that was not going to change their mind. The National Guard changed their mind. The opinion of the country, horrified at what was going on, bent their will. Mm-hmm. But it was a deliberate attempt and a successful one at gaining national attention through the media. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it goes. So it's, I get it. So if I want my cause brought to the attention of a world audience, if I want to be trending on Twitter, I have to get in front of a camera. And what's the most effective way of doing that? Doing something really horrific. Mm-hmm. Killing 3,000 Americans 14 years ago is not I'm sorry. 13 years ago. Yeah. I apologize. 2014. It didn't make a dent in our population. It shut down the world financial capital for a while. It was on paper, it is, you know, 1/10 of the number of people who die in a car accident. But it was horrific. It was the worst science fiction disaster you could imagine. It was giant buildings in the middle of the biggest city in America collapsing and people fleeing in terror, being played over and over and over again. This was the best. And what was the point? The point was to bait this country into doing something it should never have done. And we did. We marched our troops right in the middle of Iraq, for God's sakes.
Well, let's not forget, too, that the audience for that attack was also people in the Middle East, for whom the Twin Towers were a symbol of, for some odd reason, Jewish control of America. And Kojak, you know, the Twin Towers were always in Kojak. So,
Well, they were also in Barney Miller.
And Barney Miller. Yeah. So the sense that that is America. And if you attack that, you attack America. And you're also attacking Judaism in some way.
Yeah.
It was clearly what was meant by attacking those buildings. But
it was an event staged for television.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was designed as to attack the media center of America. You know, this is why, not to trivialize it, but this is why we get the stories we do on the TV programs we have. This is why Chuck Todd recycles and will recycle. This is why Andrea Mitchell has a job. This is why right after the speech, Andrea Mitchell turned to John McCain.
Right.
Because John McCain's 4 feet away. Because
and,
the offices,
and John McCain made the rounds. He was then on CNN, and he's then on Fox, and he's on all of them. Yeah. But
if it happens in the Washington, D.C., New York megalopolis, then it's important. If it happens anyplace else, it's not. So it's a matter of bringing the story to – bring Muhammad to the mountain. No, we're going to bring the mountain to Muhammad. We're going to bring the story to New York City. And then Americans will report on it.
Yep. Let's talk for a minute about Obama's speech, because, again, I want to get back to that room full of three-year-olds that are hitting each other.
Yeah.
And here is, as you said at dinner tonight, Obama did not want to make this speech.
No.
He absolutely didn't. And I felt and still feel that he's just being the mature one in the room. And it requires nuance to understand what he's saying. And that's something that TV media is terrible at, because nuance takes intelligence and nuance takes time. And that's something TV news doesn't have any of on either side. Which is why then John McCain can come in and say, boots on the ground, boots. I really think we should mail John McCain a bunch of boots.
Yeah.
Here. Put these on the ground. He doesn't ever connect it, which is ironic because he was a prisoner of war.
A thousand years ago.
40 years ago. 50 years ago. Yeah. 50. Now it's 50. The boots on the ground have feet in them that belong to parents of children in this country. But I just, that was my response. It was, oh, Mr. President, you're being mature and nuanced.
Yeah.
Great. And I just kind of rolled my eyes back in my head and said, thank you, but that I don't know what kind of good it's going to do anymore. I'm exhausted by it.
In a sense, I was listening to the speech, and the speech was, I think, bad. I don't think it was a catastrophic speech, but I think it was 50% too long. I didn't need to hear about America's great universities. Or our fountains, or our parks and recreation facilities. I need to hear about, okay, so we're going to war. Tell me why and where and how do we get out of it? None of which I really heard. I listened to reaction across the internet, and this was like a Rashomon speech because everybody heard a different speech. John McCain heard a sniveling coward who refused to defend American values. And because that's what John McCain's going to hear no matter what you say. John McCain could be on the elevator listening to the Muzak version of In a God of Vita. And what he would hear is, the sniveling bastard who won't defend America. That's what he hears everywhere he goes. That's what the voice in his head tells him everywhere. And that voice in his head is Lindsey Graham. So that's not a surprise. So John McCain heard what John McCain wants to hear. I read Andrew Sullivan, who said, oh, Barack Obama has thrown away his presidency. He's in Dick Cheney territory now. It's just, I'm completely breaking with him. This is not the person I voted for. He might as well be Dick Cheney. He threw it all away, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wow. Because Andrew Sullivan is prone to hysterically overreacting every time anything doesn't go his way. Mm-hmm. Andrew Sullivan, and there was to his credit, he did print a note from somebody sent to him saying, some of this sounds a lot like the people who fucked up on Iraq are now wildly overreacting in the opposite direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that may or may not be true, but Andrew Sullivan has a...
Well, it's certainly true with Chris Matthews.
Well, yeah. Well, Andrew Sullivan has a track record of getting on board with Iraq and calling anybody who didn't agree with him a fifth columnist.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, he fell in love with Barack Obama. And then Barack Obama blew one debate, and that was it. It was over. Game over, people. Game over. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Romney's going to win. He just he's a hysteric. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so he, in my opinion, wildly overreacted. Somewhere in the middle, and you know how I don't like being a centrist or a middle guy, but somewhere between those two poles, there's Charlie Pierce and me going, you know, what I heard was, I ain't going in without allies.
Yeah.
And I ain't going in unless Congress votes to. And I'm not going to acknowledge they have the right to restrain me, which I think they do, frankly. So I think he's on dodgy ground there. But I heard someone who said, yeah, I'm happy to come provide air support for your war. But I want to start seeing a whole bunch of people from the region lining up to help me.
And John Kerry today got words on paper, and that we'll see if it's worth the paper it's printed on, from like 11 countries, including Saudi Arabia, that, yeah, we're going to help. We'll see where that goes. I mean, I don't trust many of these countries to do anything right. But
part of what Barack Obama was trying to do, we're talking about the history of Iraq and how we got to this place. Mm-hmm. He was trying to make the people who were the architects of the original failure, the people who broke the region, come out of the shadows and take responsibility for it. Yeah. And he was trying to make some of the people in the region who have no problem funding terrorists and paying them to go kill other people and have no problem calling for America's help and then calling for America's destruction in the next sentence, who have no problem oppressing their own people or who have no problem saying, yes, we want to replace your dictatorship with a theocracy. Asking those people to step out of the shadows, step out of their little quiet, secretive relationships and take some ownership of the situation. You know, you broke it. We helped you break it, but this region is your backyard and you're going to need to take some ownership of this. You know, this is where you ask the three-year-olds to grow the fuck up a little bit.
Right.
And if you're not going to, if this is a fire in your backyard and you don't care, or you're expecting me to come in and then you're going to take pot shots at the fire department when they arrive on the scene, the fire department ain't coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If ISIS sweeps down to Baghdad and sacks that city, I'm really sorry. But if you can't get the 130,000 Iraqi army regulars that we spent $1 billion training mm-hmm. to stop dropping their rifles and running away, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy. It's really, really unfortunate. But we can no more hold together that country than we can hold together South Vietnam. If they won't fight for themselves, if their government is corrupt, if they can't put aside their petty differences to face a common enemy, then sorry. And the same applies, frankly, to Congress. If you can't stop hating the President of the United States long enough to accomplish anything, then I'm done with y'all.
We're done with you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're talking about shutting down the government, quite a few of them.
Go ahead.
I love this whole thing about we're getting off track here, but I love this whole thing about immigration too. The idea that Barack Obama decided to try to save two Senate seats, including Al Franken's, by putting this off. Well, you're just playing politics with immigration. They didn't want to vote on it either.
Yeah. Yeah. No, everybody's playing politics with immigration.
Everyone's playing politics with immigration. We all know they're all playing politics with immigration. Yes.
And
I'm with the reporter on MSNBC. She says, I dare you to play politics with it after the election. I dare you to vote no.
Yeah.
Dare you. Go right ahead.
Go right ahead.
Can we get back to violence?
Yeah, please.
For just a minute.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I want to talk about Ray Rice.
Yeah.
And how sports seems to always trump crime.
Oh, always.
I'm thinking about this week about Penn State and people rioting because their game was going to be taken away because their coach had molested children.
Yeah.
And then Steubenville with people getting drunk and raping students at Steubenville.
Mm-hmm.
And members of the media worried about the long-term players' futures. I'm grateful that this has come out the way it has.
Yeah.
In that it has generated so many conversations. The hashtag why I stayed and why I left on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's about women making decisions regarding domestic violence and taking ownership. And that has, there have been a lot of very brave people coming forward. Someone I also really admire is a man named Terry Crews, who is an actor, a former NFL player. He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, does some comedy movies and so forth. And he came out this week and talked about how seeing the Ray Rice video inside the elevator was post-traumatic stress for him.
Uh-huh.
Because his mother got knocked out by his dad.
Uh-huh.
All the time. And his parents are still alive and they're still married. He remembers that. He knows that, you know, it's not let's make pancakes. It's not I'm going to forget about this. It's no, my dad knocked my mother out cold in the kitchen, like just knocked her out. And as he put it, we in the black community need to talk about this because this happens and it's ours. We have to own this and start working on it. And I thought that it was brave of him to come forward in light of the fact that his parents are still married and still alive. And I don't know whether he talked to them first or not. But one of the problems with domestic violence is we tend to think that it's the couples that needs to work it out. And it really is all of us that need to work it out.
Well,
I think, and
I'm not going to disagree. I'm very skeptical of the society is to blame answer.
I don't blame society for this, but I think that for a long time we've allowed patriarchy to determine what happens.
Oh yeah, it's in our humor, it's in our jokes, it's in the Honeymooners.
Yep, to the moon, Alice. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
The sports aspect of it, maybe because I never caught the bug, I see it as a business.
Yeah.
It's just a business.
Well, and the NFL is particularly egregious at allowing violence among their players to just turn the other way.
Their business is violence.
Yeah, I'm a little disturbed that the punishment for Ray Rice in this instance is he loses his job rather than there's counseling and are there going to be assault charges? Are there going to be, he did marry his fiance after this. So there's a lot of troubling nuances. Again, there's that word of what do you do? I'm not happy with the idea that the punishment is, well, you don't get to play for the NFL anymore. Really? That's it? Mm-hmm. That's what we've decided is, it's almost like, you know, the punishment for Sandy Hook is we're going to have open carry now.
Yeah.
Well, wait, what?
There's the point. The big scandal in the NFL before this was concussions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your business is violence.
Yeah.
Your business is gladiatorial contest between guys who under controlled circumstances beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
And that's the business. And you get millions of people watching and cheering and screaming and dedicating their lives and their kids and et cetera to it. Fine. But it's a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, but it's a business. It's a business. So what I don't mean to make light of anyone's specific circumstances. What Ray Rice did to his wife, Wall Street did to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we let him off the hook. Mm-hmm. And we let him off
because
the hook.
Because money.
Ray Rice, I made this joke to you earlier, but I kind of, you know, this is how Ray Rice is a job creator.
Yeah, you were joking.
Ray Rice is a job creator, and by Randite theory, therefore he is morally superior to you.
Mm-hmm.
He is rich, therefore he's better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore
mm-hmm.
he deserves to be protected and coddled and shielded from any consequence that might attend his incredibly violent behavior.
Because he's paid to be violent.
Well, because he's paid to be violent, but no, because he's rich.
Yeah.
Because he creates money, he creates wealth. Therefore, he deserves to be protected, just like Wall Street banksters deserve to be protected. Just like they can go ahead and fuck the economy, mm-hmm. trash the global economy, and walk away scot-free with a slap on the wrist.
Yep.
Because they're wealth creators, because they're money, and money gets whatever the fuck money wants. So,
you know, I've got a cover of Newsweek magazine from 2009, early in 2009, on my bulletin board in my office. It says, "We're all socialists now."
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got a red hand and a blue hand shaking hands. And we're all socialists now. This is going to be the big government economy.
Right.
Because the banks had to be bailed out.
Right. And what happened?
And I knew when I saw that, this is going to last 2 months. As soon as it's time to bail out little people, it's all going to stop. And the
spigot's
going
to
be turned off.
As soon as it comes time to, okay, you clearly can't control yourself.
Right. And we're going to... We really have to rein you in and break up.
That's when suddenly everybody's a capitalist again. Why are you trying to regulate me? What are you, a communist man? So of all of the reason people like this get protected is because they're making money for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're making money for somebody, they can get away with murder. And sometimes literally get away with murder.
Really, yeah, yeah.
And the entire system is set up to make sure people like this are not punished for anything they do. And that is capitalism. That is that the heart of capitalism is the ability to punch the fuck out of whoever you want, but you make money, so we're gonna let you get away with it. That's the capitalist deal. And any attempt to limit your behavior or control you or rein you in is regulation.
But on the other hand, David Brooks blames ISIL on Woodstock.
For reasons that, again, pass all understanding, the New York Times has this feature called The Conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In which Gail Collins, who's a very funny, often very insightful writer, has this awkward, forced, horrible attempt to mimic banter called The Conversation with David Brooks once a week. David Brooks just walked right through this conversation with his all-purpose theory of everything playbook. And he said, well, basically the problem is once upon a time there was this sort of orderly world system. This orderly global system that everyone respected, and world leaders like Roosevelt had this instinctive knowledge. You can't really describe it. It's kind of like pukas. You know, it's kind of like Harvey. It's invisible. You can't see it. Nobody but David Brooks can see it. But there was always this invisible global orderly system of nations that was kept intact. And is, whether it was good or bad, it kept the world in an orderly place. And then the boomers came along. And they lost the ability or ignored it or didn't learn these tricks of the trade. And so boomers basically let the global world order system fall apart. And then a bunch of bad things happened. And then you have ISIL. And
really nothing about how we didn't belong in Vietnam. And that's why people were resisting the war. It was all they were undisciplined. Yeah.
Nothing boomers. About, you know, overthrowing Mossadegh.
Yeah,
in Iran,
during
this orderly system, nothing about the Nazis.
Iran-Contra.
Just like this, this completely insane. And David Brooks is a history major. David Brooks isn't a journalist. David Brooks is a graduate history major from the University of Chicago. And he makes this shit up all the time. Once upon a time, there was this great orderly system on which I based my entire conservative theory. And the boomers came along and fucked it all up, and now there's no such system. Now everybody's just running around pell-mell, helter-skelter, and it's all the boomers' fault. And to her credit, Gail Collins said, basically, I think you're lying there, David. I think you're just making this shit up. But he just laughed it off and rolled on because nothing, there's no force.
Because he's going to get paid.
Well, there's nothing that can stop him anymore.
Yeah.
There's nothing standing in his way. He gets to do this all the time. So he broke out his all-purpose boomers are to blame, hippies are to blame for everything theory, because he's got nothing else. So, and I just shrugged my shoulders. Well, of course he is. Of course he's going to blame. Somehow this is going to be the fault of a hippie somewhere. But he really had to stretch. He really pulled a hamstring stretching far enough to make this about the fucking baby boomers. But he did. So way to go, David. You're a consistent liar, if nothing else.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
I was thinking about doing a Bible bitch this week, and we're not going to do one, but I did Google, quote, Christian responses to violence, end quote. And some of the stories from as early as 1989 on the web of people who have forgiven someone who murdered a family member or a child. And they found it in their heart to visit that person in prison or to pray for that person or to see the humanity of that person. And I just want to say, I don't know if I would have that in me. The closest I've come to something like that is meeting someone who lost her husband to cancer. And she wound up working in a hospice helping people who were dying exactly the way her husband did.
Wow.
And I don't know, you know, a lot of people tell me I'm a spiritually strong person. I don't know if I'd have that much in me to do that. But that's the question that I have this week as I think about Ray Rice and his wife and ISIL and Sandy Hook and the anniversary of 9/11 and Ferguson and.
Well, and let me add one more, lest it be forgotten, the history. 2006, I think it was, man broke into an Amish school.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And shot a lot of people.
Shot a lot of children. And it was by the grace of their faith that they were able to sort of close ranks around that and get through that. And that makes them better than me, frankly.
Yeah. And that's the question that I have this week is what do we have in us to do?
Yeah, well, and individuals and communities can do that. I don't think you can do that as a nation. I think it's just too big.
But we make up the society. Individuals make up the society.
Sure. Yes, we do.
Although I say that, and turnout in the Democratic primary in New York was horrible. Yep. Horrible. Yep. So, and this was tweeted, and, you know, the social media was wide awake about Zephyr Teachout. And
every 4 years, we have a chance to make decisions between candidates. And before that, we have a decision to make it in the primaries. And we have had some very stark choices between Carter and Reagan and Gore and Bush over the years. And the bad guys have won.
Yeah.
And the bad guys have won, not because the good guys lacked energy or grace or a clear vision, or the candidates, however imperfect they were better than the other guy. You know, George McGovern was a fine candidate, a war hero and a thoughtful man and a kind person and all around interesting guy. He got slaughtered by Nixon. And it wasn't because he was lacking in virtue. It's because he was really bad at politics and he was bad at playing Nixon politics. And right now, the battlefield in this country is Nixon has set the terms. And if you're not willing to play that game and play it really hard, this is that speech from The Best Man.
Yeah. You
know, power's not a toy we give to good children. And if you're not willing to do what you need to do to take it and use it, then you have no business playing in this adult game.
And but that means that Newt Gingrich wins.
No, it means that you have to play as hard as he does on behalf of the angels. This is something that I quit an organization I was part of long ago because there was a lot of hand-wringing about Newt Gingrich specifically. I said, no, you need to learn from him. You need to learn the lesson. You don't become him. But every time you're in front of a microphone, remind people that Republicans are depraved and they're monstrous and they do terrible things. Well, yeah, we don't. Well, then you're going to lose. And then when you lose, Newt Gingrich wins. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is. Pick up the gun. If you're in a gunfight, pick up the fucking gun. And this reluctance to fight hard. Al Franken fights hard.
Yeah, he does.
He fights really hard. Paul Wellstone fought like a son of a bitch.
Yeah. That's a different kind of fighting than ISIL.
But equally passionate. I'm not talking about, you know, fight.
You
I'm
said pick up about, the gun, about, and we're talking about how we overcome violence, and you say pick up the gun.
It's a very poor metaphor.
Yeah.
Take up your cross. How's that?
There you go.
You can be a passionate, eloquent, focused fighter on the side of the good guys.
Yeah.
And still be a liberal. But you have to learn the nature of the field of battle that you're on. And you're not in a place where standing up and giving virtuous speeches about the nobility of the human spirit is going to get you anything but laughed at. Mm-hmm. Those people should be your allies, but you've got to know how to win. And if you don't know how to win, then you're never going to get within a million miles of implementing the policies that make the world a better place.
I just feel like Barack Obama did everything right to win.
Yeah.
And then had it snatched away from him by some really evil people who were traitors.
Actually, let's go to Tom Hartman, because that actually is right on topic.
All right.
It's a little bit of a harsh jump, but...
all right, because you wrote down Tom Hartman hurt my ears this week.
He did.
Did he do that?
Well, I was driving around like I do.
On your paper route.
On my paper route. Delivering papers
as we call it, yeah.
I had an occasion to listen to Tom Hartman, and I like Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman's smart. He's funny. We got at least one of his books, probably two on our bookshelves out there somewhere. And so I highly recommend Tom Hartman. But he has this he has this fantasy about winning the water cooler wars, that he will show his audience how to win that argument against those conservatives when he get back to the office. But liberals on radio, smart liberals on radio and television are a rarity anyway. That when you take conservative callers to goose up your ratings, or you have conservative guests who are not thoughtful, who are just assholes, it's like, really? I can get that anytime from the Rush Limbaugh show 24 hours a day. I don't need an additional dose of bullshit on your show to show me how fucking balanced you are. So he has this woman on named Scotty Nell Hughes. And she's the author of Roar, The New Conservative Woman Speaks Out.
Oh, God.
And just the sheer number of reflex conservative talking points pumping out of her mouth per minute was impressive.
Hmm.
She went from Jimmy Carter was a failure to Jimmy Carter's candidacy was sunk by gas prices, which wasn't true. That she had the calendar all wrong. To Ronald Reagan was awesome, the unalloyed greatness of Ronald Reagan. To if you really cared about energy, you'd sign the XL pipeline. To something George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
And she just went bam. And the thing, here's the thing. He was very calmly rebutting each one of her talking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And after each talking point was rebutted, she promptly deflected to the next talking point, and the next, and the next, and the next. And I thought, at some point, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
This has become just another Sisyphusian 1980s video game.
Mm-hmm.
You go layer after layer after level after level, and you beat the level, and you beat the one above it, and you beat the one above it. And then you're just sitting there out of quarters, and you realize there's no end to this game.
Yeah.
You never win because they never admit, oh, gosh, you're right. I'm fucking wrong. I've been lying for the last hour, 2 hours, or 5 hours, or 10 years. And you're so busy debating this idiot, winning each round, you didn't notice that they're winning the whole battle because they're keeping you pinned down by the notion that they're reasonable, that you can actually reason with them. There's no reasoning with this woman. There's no reasoning with anyone like her. She's there to spew talking points, and it doesn't matter how many you defeat, she'll always have another one. And so it exhausts me when Tom Hartman thinks that's a good use of his time or my time, because it's not. And maybe if this were the 80s, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe this made sense. But we know who these people are now. They're never going to see reason, Tom. They're never going to change their mind. And the people you're training to win these arguments are going to go out and find people just like her, who think just like her, who are never going to change their mind, who are just going to keep wasting your time with one bullshit idea after another until you just exhaust it. And then she's going to go home and tell her friends how she got that liberal. I won that argument. And it drove me nuts, because it's this stupid liberal obsession with reasoning with people who are inherently unreasonable and who have no intention of changing their mind. They're there to confound you and piss you off and waste your time and make you cry but they're never going to agree with you, and they're never going to acknowledge that, you know, Tom, for the last half hour you've rebutted everything I've said. That means I've been wrong about 38 consecutive issues for the last 20 years. Maybe I should reexamine my policies, because that day will never fucking come. So start wrapping your head around the fact that, no, no, these people are not going to be defeated by reason. They're going to be defeated by politics. And this is where I fault Barack Obama. He got into office, and instead of setting up a Truth and Reconciliation Committee or any kind of way to litigate what had just happened, this horrible trauma that was the 8 years of the Bush administration, this horrible offense against American life, this horrible PTSD-causing tragedy that we had just all gone through, that we're all just shaking and going, thank God, it looks like it's almost over. Instead of litigating it and putting it down in the history books the way it actually happened so that we can stop it from happening again, instead of doing that, he went out to lunch with George Will and Charles Krauthammer and David Brooks and talked a bunch of happy centrist talk. And a bunch of hippies like me were on the side going, wait a minute. No, 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 no. You have to bring these people the book now. You have to hold them to account now, because if you don't, you're going to teach them that it's perfectly okay to lie and get away with it. No matter what they do, no matter what bullshit they pull, they just spent 8 years wrecking this country. And your response is, let's not look back. Let's look forward. Okay, oh, we're going to let them get away with the crimes?
Again.
What did that teach them? That taught them that they can bully this guy. They can buffalo him. They can push him around. They can lie and lie and lie and lie and lie all they want, and nothing's going to happen to them. Like this woman on the Tom Hartman show. And the person who taught them that is Barack Obama. Yeah. Because he didn't do shit about it. So now we are 6 years into his presidency, and he would really like these people to stop behaving like vandals and seditionists and start behaving like I don't know, elected officials in an advanced modern democracy. And what he failed to notice is they're not. And they're not, because we never held them to account.
Well, I don't think holding them to account would change anything, because they still have Fox News to lie for them.
Yeah.
So I don't think even then, you know, you have Fox News right now saying that this is Barack Obama's fault for pulling out of Iraq, when that was George Bush's plan that Obama implemented again.
That is, you have a very good point. My point is this: if the day they started pulling this shit, Barack Obama said, no, I'm not going to put up with this, because you're the fuckers who broke the country. You are the people who ruined the country. The George Bush voters, the Republican voters, all you people who are putting on Gadsden flags and pointy hats and calling yourselves Tea Parties, you're a bunch of fucking Republicans and you're running away.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fall for it.
He called them out.
He never called them out. He never called them out on anything. He never called them out on their treason. He never called them out on their lies. The least he could have done was... was provide a counter narrative to this insane theory that they're now proposing. The Bush administration never happened. That history began, I mean, we joke about it, but they really believe history began in 2009. Katie Abram, you know, being exhibit A.
Dr. Glass, we have to wrap this up, but I think we're also speaking of the of this from a position of white privilege, and I just want to say that.
Well, he had 20 other things on his plate, and I get
Yep.
Barack Obama, 6 years into his administration, wondering why he can't get any cooperation, is because, man, these people were knee-high weeds when you came into office. And now they're a full-grown, horrifying forest that they've climbed up your walls and are tearing things down. You could have stopped them. And if you listened to liberals, you would have stopped them. And maybe they would still be terrible. And maybe things would still be awful. But
and maybe you would be more uppity in their mind than you are now.
No,
and
he's already at 110% uppity. But
and your legacy, that, you know, that was the saddest thing, was seeing Mrs. Greenspan last night saying he did not want this to be his legacy. He did not want having to deal with the Middle East at the end of his presidency to be his legacy. And this is his legacy. And I agree with you 100% that in a perfect world, he should have stood up to these mofos and said, nobody believes that the Tea Party is a new party. And anyone who says that is lying. But I think he also genuinely wanted to change Washington. Remember that wonderful meeting he had where John McCain was in the audience and they had this kind of open discussion with the president about how are we going to get some things done. And that lasted for two whole minutes because the Republican Party would have none of it. We're going to have decades to talk about missed opportunities in the Obama administration. But, I mean, and that's the privilege that we have because we're not
here. Well, let's put it this way. Lincoln had to go through a whole lot of generals before he found Grant. Now, presidents make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
They don't get it right all the time. But a cardinal failure on the Obamas, on the part of Barack Obama personally, was not understanding the nature of the opposition that was coming to destroy his presidency from day one. And if it was some kind of big fucking secret.
Yeah. If Davey wasn't writing about this every single day and you weren't writing about this every single day.
If there wasn't the entire Clinton administration to refer to as material, then I would have been, but these people.
Came out of nowhere, didn't it? No, it didn't.
Where did these guys come from? But they were locked and loaded and ready to go day one. And they were very clear what their intentions were. And if you didn't notice that, it's because you didn't want to notice it.
Yeah.
That's not the America you wanted to lead. And guess what? It's not the America I want either, but it's the one we have. So that was the America you wanted, but it's the America you got. This isn't the war you want, but it's the war you got.
Yeah.
So sorry, that's the job. And the job 6 years ago should have been calling these fuckers out and making sure and putting them on notice so that if they do pull this bullshit, even if it does work, you can say, look, I told you. I told you. You know what you want to do? You want to vote these people out. Because it's hard to say the Republicans are my friends and my colleagues and my good pals, et cetera, et cetera. And then 4 years later say, oh, by the way, they're all a bunch of fucking monsters. You need to get them out of office because they're destroying the country. You got to build that narrative over time. And the narrative was there to be built. You chose not to. And now you're paying the price for it. And I'm really sorry because it's costing me too.
Thank you, Driftglass.
On that happy note.
Let's end on a happy note.
Yeah.
Let's read this article from 10 Grain at Mock Paper Scissors.
Oh, please. I haven't
about
read it yet.
So. The Mars Hill Church pastor, Mark Driscoll, who's in all kinds of trouble. He's in all kinds of trouble. But he wrote under a pseudonym.
That bastard.
In 2001. This is just uncovered this week.
People who write under pseudonyms are not to be trusted.
Do you write about penises?
Constantly.
All right.
It's all subtext, but if you know what you're looking for, it's always there.
Mark Driscoll wrote, quote, ultimately God created you and it is his penis.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh,
you are simply borrowing it for a while. Knowing that his penis would need a home, God created a woman to be your wife. And when you marry her and look down, you will notice that your wife is shaped differently than you.
Really?
And makes a very nice home.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, if you are single, you must remember, your penis is homeless.
Yeah. And it's a moocher, too, apparently. So, mooching homeless penis.
I want to read that again. Therefore, if you are single, you must remember that your penis is homeless. It needs a home. But though you may believe your hand is shaped like a home, it is not. And if you look at a man, it is quite obvious that what a homeless man does not need is another man without a home.
Aren't there temporary homeless shelters for penises, God? With nap rates, you know? Can I just ask a question?
Bible bitch has nothing to say about
this. I just want
to
know, if God made your penis, if it's his...
It's God's penis.
Couldn't he have made it just a little larger? I mean, if you're all-powerful God, you've made galaxies. You made dinosaurs. You made Steve Gutenberg a star.
There is in women's magazine circles, it's legendary, the story of the gynecologist whose patient was having difficulty with intercourse after having her first child. And he said, oh, don't worry. It's the reason you're having pain with intercourse is lack of use. Told his patient, just start using it again.
Your penis garage is rusty. I'm sorry, God's penis garage.
God's penis garage needs a little bit of help there. Okay.
Some of God's own WD-40.
There you go. You'll be all set. All right. Finally, I want to announce that this podcast is not sponsored by a small business grant from Chase Bank.
No. Shoot.
You sent me an email today saying, look, wait, maybe we could qualify for this small business grant. We have fewer than 100 employees.
Oh, by a lot.
And they're giving money away to small businesses.
Which is nice.
I went and read the fine print on that one.
God damn it.
Chase Bank disqualifies any quote-unquote business that might, quote, disparage or denigrate in writing or otherwise any political orientation.
Shit.
So teabaggers aren't, that's just an orientation.
Yeah.
I don't think they should get married, though.
Well, I know that truth is an absolute defense against slander, but it's not an absolute defense against not getting a grant. So I just was like,
hey, I think if Breitbart.com can freak out over getting audited by the IRS, we should be able to freak out about not getting a small business grant from Chase Bank.
Yeah,
this is discrimination. We're being persecuted.
No, I can't get it up for it. If God
God's penis won't get up for this.
God's penis won't get excited over this. I take it up with the Almighty. I have nothing to do with it. No.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Feisty. Feisty was sent in by David, who is a longtime listener and friend of the podcast. And David is facing some health problems, and we want David to know that he is in our thoughts.
You are indeed, David.
On the other hand, Feisty is 16 years old and is still going strong because Feisty.
Yeah.
Apparently, Feisty is a darling cat and is not at all feisty, but his name is Feisty, and he's on our Facebook page and website this week. Thank you, David, for sending him in. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. We got a very nice note from Hawaii this week. And the listener who wrote in said that he went to his post office and suggested that they make Go Postal Unions merchandise
to sell at the post office.
And the postal employees looked at him like maybe he was off his meds.
Wow.
He said they were not used to kind and supportive words at his post office. But
two dirty words on a t-shirt. No. No, we like post offices because they keep the country knitted together and Benjamin Franklin. And we like unions because we love a middle class to exist in our country.
See, that makes you a communist. Okay.
Hell yeah.
So, Dripglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are very glad to see John McCain has decided to break his long monastic silence and finally agree to appear on the TV machine.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Jeff Glass.
So, Science Fiction University, our friend Dogface Herman is back with some more Science Fiction University questions. This week, he would like you.
Yes.
To name the science fiction movie / show and answer the question, what could possibly go wrong?
Ah.
You know, usually that's what science fiction movies are about.
It's all they're about. Come on, Forbin Project.
There you go. Oh, one of my favorites, and I hardly ever see it on TV, Forbin Project. Starring the guy who plays Victor on Young and the Restless. I wonder if he's still on. I'll bet he is.
I smell sequel.
Number one. This is one I think you'll get.
And at the same time, our people grumbled for more nylons and washing machines. Our doomsday scheme cost us just a small fraction of what we've been spending on defense in a single year. But the deciding factor was when we learned that your country was working along similar lines, and we were afraid of a doomsday gap.
This is preposterous. I've never approved of anything like that.
Our source was the New York Times.
Oh, come on now. Dogface Herman. Man, come on, man.
Come on.
That's Dr. Strangelove.
That's right.
They're in the war room.
They are. What could possibly go wrong?
The end of the world as we know it.
Mm-hmm. And to steal a line from Colbert, Dogface Herman says, is this a great movie or the greatest movie? Yes. Yeah.
I believe this was originally intended not to be a comedy.
Oh, really? And then they realize You kind of have to, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's got so much good stuff in it.
All right.
I've used Jack Ripper.
Yes.
Sterling hates Jack Ripper so many times. It's such a perfect movie.
All right, number two.
There is no Buddhist God per se. It is the self, the individual mind that contains immortality and ultimate truth.
What the hell is not religious about that? You've simply replaced God with the original self.
Yes, but we've localized it. At least we know where the self is. It's in our own minds. It's a form of human energy. Our atoms are 6 billion years old. We've got 6 billion years of memory in our minds. Memory is energy. It doesn't disappear. It's still in there. That's a physiological pathway to our earlier consciousnesses. There has to be, and I'm telling you, it's in the goddamn limbic system. Jessica.
Oh, that's an obscure one. That's, well, not obscure now. That I went to go see that at least once. Possibly many times. There might have been drugs involved. That was Altered States.
That's right. I saw it in the theater and I was not on drugs.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe I should have been.
I believe there were.
I wasn't somebody who took drugs, but I thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I believe there were
bare breasts in there.
There were naked bodies and weird thing. It was a weird movie.
The redhead co-star. That's William Hurt. And I can't remember her name. She had a TV show in the 90s. But what could go wrong? You could devolve into an ape creature and kill everyone. Also, you could lose your identity, lose your mind, and possibly destroy the world, but I'm not sure about that part.
Right. All right, number three.
It's really quite simple. All life is a physical and chemical process, correct? It stands to reason, then, that if one could find extremely fresh specimens and recharge that chemical process, bang, we have reanimation.
The theory is not new, West.
But my reagent is. Which is why I need you to help me.
Oh, I don't even know if I actually saw this, but I saw the ads for it enough.
Uh-huh.
Reanimator.
That's right, Reanimator.
Yeah.
Bringing the dead back to life is never a good idea, says Buck A. Sherman.
Just never.
All right, number four.
You know, you people have had total freedom. That doesn't give you a license to murder.
Miles, you petitioned for Kennedy High School to be used as an experiment in disciplinary education.
Yes, but not to use my school as a war zone.
We had a new product to market, and this was the perfect place to test it in.
Yes, but these androids were supposed to educate the students.
Battle droids, Miles. Battle droids. Military surplus marked to be shipped to Central America for the 10-year war. That is, until the DED called. It seemed they were having a little problem in our schools.
Oh, hell if I know. I will bet you real American currency that's Stacy Keach.
It is Stacy Keach.
And Roddy McDowell's brother.
You mean Malcolm McDowell?
Malcolm McDowell,
McDowell is not Roddy McDowell's brother. But
they have very distinctive voices. And if you haven't heard Stacy Keach's Bazooka Joe comic,
bubblegum
commercial from 30 Rock, you're missing something. When did America get soft? But I have no idea.
It's called Class of 1999, and it is killer robots as school teachers.
Well, sure.
And one of the killer robots is played by Pam Grier, so that's probably worth seeing.
So what you're saying is Quentin Tarantino spanked it to this movie. Is almost certainly. Yeah. Okay.
Number five.
What did happen?
Last night after you left, I hit on it.
Or at least I thought I did.
Did what? The external force operating in conjunction with the DNA to make all those people strong. It's the gamma ray. Yeah. I mashed up a graph of excessive gamma activity from sunspots to each incident of supernormal strength. In every case, they matched.
It doesn't sound like any of the current ones, but it's got to be the Hulk.
I think it's Bill Bixby in the Hulk, but it is the Incredible Hulk, yes.
Yeah.
Turning into a giant green rage monster is what could go wrong.
Yeah. Or is that just what could go awesome?
It could be awesome.
Depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very fine movies. I don't think I will ever want to see Altered States again.
No, me neither.
Doctor Strangelove holds up really well over time. And, you know, if future generations ever want to learn what Cold War paranoia looked like, that's the movie you'd show them.
I'd also like to take this moment to thank another listener of ours, Raymond. He sends us books and movies and all kinds of things all the time.
Yeah.
But he sent us Groundhog Day on DVD. And the kids are very excited about having a movie night with Groundhog Day.
They went ape.
Groundhog Day,
that's a great movie.
That's great. We got to all watch it. We got to sit in the living room and all watch it. So we will
over
do that.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Well, on Groundhog Day, they did do that over and over again on Comedy Central one time. Yeah.
We miss your Harold Ramis.
Yeah. Well, so thank you, Raymond, and thank you, Dogface Herman, for contributing to Science Fiction Universe. And Raymond also sent a book with that you didn't have. Is that
right? I didn't have the book. That's right.
You had the Robert Heinlein story that was in the book, but you didn't have the book. So
thank you, Raymond.
Thank you, Raymond. We appreciate all that you do for us. Thank you.
If I could put my hands on a book at this minute, I know it's sitting in another room. I would pull it out about.
I know exactly where it is. You want me to go get it?
No, that's okay. It's Gresham, the guy who Bill Gresham, Gresham's Law, talking about how nobody ever got rich peddling gloom.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Our podcast might just be about that this week. I don't know.
We'll have to see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Driftglass.
Thank you, Blue Girls.
I love you.
I love you too. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.